Hey all, it's Jesse. As 2020 draws to a close, think about what you're thankful for. Other than, I'm willing to bet 2020 drawing to a close. What got you through the year? Odds are, if you're hearing my voice, public radio was one of the things. Public radio gave you accurate, dependable news about the election and the pandemic, information about local stories that matter to you. You got fun and fascinating interviews from shows like Bullseye. If you want to show your gratitude at the end of this year, consider supporting your local public radio station. Public radio stations really need your help right now, more than ever. And it's really easy to do. Just go to donate.npr.org/bullseye and give whatever you can. And thanks.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Dick Van Dyke turned 95 this month. 95. That alone is a remarkable feat. But there's, of course, so much more to Dick Van Dyke than simply having been born before TV was invented. He's a legend of stage and screen. The Dick Van Dyke Show, Mary Poppins, Bye Bye Birdie, so many more. He's still performing today. To celebrate Dick's birthday, we're replaying my interview with him from 2015 when he was only 90. He'd just written a book called Keep Moving, which is, you know, what he does. He sings and dances every day. He goes to the grocery store and says hi to Debbie, his favorite cashier. He'll even sing a song or two on stage every now and again. Anyway, before we get into our conversation, here's a bit of one of the greatest TV comedies of all time, The Dick Van Dyke Show. Rob and Laura, played by Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore, of course, have accidentally eavesdropped on their neighbors, and they don't like what they heard. But the neighbors are coming over to play charades. Laura is acting out the name of a song.
It's a song title. First word. Over. A beat. Pat.
Crush. Destroy.
What? Oh, second word. Okay, second. A little word. Small.
Petty, hypocritical, two-faced.
That's a song title?
Second word is petty, two-faced.
You can do the whole thing. The whole thing. Okay. March.
Yeah. Walk. Stomp. Stomp all over people. Walk all over people. Goose step. Treachery, treachery. Two-faced, two-faced. Stab, stab in the back, stab in the back.
Point, finger, finger.
Accuse, indict, malicious accusery. That's right, Pearl Harbor.
I got it. What is it?
On the street where you live.
Dick Van Dyke, welcome to Bullseye. It's so great to have you on the show.
It's glad to be here, Jesse.
I was glad to read, you know, in your new book, there's a dialogue that you have with Carl Reiner, who's a little bit older than you.
3 years.
You'll get there. And he, of course, created the Dick Van Dyke Show. And there's a little part where he describes that just once in a while, his TiVo records Dick Van Dyke from off of some cable channel. And once in a while when he's getting ready to go to bed, he'll just watch some Dick Van Dyke and think, oh, we did a good job.
Yes. What was that one line you just said, murderous?
My favorite was goose stepping. It's a little fascist humor on television in 1965
writing.
Or whatever it was.
Yes.
Did you intend to be an entertainer when you were a kid?
No, I really didn't. It was too far away. You know, it was something I didn't. I loved. I was in all the shows in school. I was a radio announcer at 17, and I really never thought about it. I loved entertaining, but as a profession, it was just a too far away to think about. It happened incrementally.
What kind of radio announcer were you?
It was during the war. Everybody was getting drafted. I saw the ad in the paper, and I went down and auditioned. We had a 250-watt CBS affiliate, and I got the job. I did the news and had a disc jockey show and everything. I loved radio. I dreamed of becoming a television announcer. But things went a lot further than that.
I mean, this was you dreaming about becoming a television announcer. This is quite literally the dawn of television.
Absolutely. I was on television back when you had to wear gray makeup and black lipstick. in 1948. I probably moved in earlier than anybody.
That sounds terrifying. Not to watch. It seems fine to watch in black and white. But in real life, in front of those giant lights, it must have been awful.
Oh, it was. Otherwise, it was fuzzy. Everything had to be distinct and stark. It was at the top of Mount Wilson. We had to go up to where the antenna was. That was the only studio there was.
I want to talk to you about your show business career before you got into broadcasting. And obviously, television especially has been your bread and butter for most of your life.
Oh, yeah.
But before you were in television, you and a friend from back home, or was it a friend from the service, had a stage show. And I don't think I entirely understand what the stage show was. Can you describe it to me?
It was something that's very popular now, karaoke. We did pantomime to records. That was our act.
I mean, it's very popular now, but people don't pay to see it. So what did you do besides mouth the words?
Well, we made comedy out of it. If it was opera, we'd do it funny. There was a group called the Spike Jones Band. We did those, which are kind of we were very, very broad. There's no doubt about that. I was kind of the Jerry Lewis of the act. But we worked in Vegas and Reno, here, New York. It was very popular. There were several groups doing a record pantomime. And I thought that was a lark, and one day I'd go home and do something serious with my life. But one thing happened after another, and I never got out of the business.
We actually have a clip of you on television from before the Dick Van Dyke Show. You had a long run with CBS where you were hosting basically working on every kind of television program. You hosted The Price is Right, for one thing.
As a tryout. Goodson Todman was developing the show. They'd bring in people off the street, and they needed someone to be the MC. And I would go home to my wife and say, they're doing this show of people guessing how much something costs. It'll never go. What was that, 40 years ago, probably? I didn't understand it.
You hosted the CBS Morning Show alongside someone folks might have heard of called Walter Cronkite.
Yes. I was 29 and didn't know what I was doing.
This is a clip of you hosting a show called CBS Cartoon Theater. It was an anthology show, a package show of what I presume were probably theatrical cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So what you will hear mostly is Dick Van Dyke doing physical comedy in interaction with the cartoon characters that are on a TV screen next to him.
As my friends have just indicated, I'm Dick Van Dyke. Good evening. We'd all like to welcome you to CBS Cartoon Theater. The stars of our show, whom you no doubt have recognized, are Heckle and Jekyll, Dicky Duck, Sour Puss, Gandy Goose, and Little Roper. Each week, our stars, whom I'm very happy to call my friends, will appear...
Hey, boss! Hey, boss!
Yes?
You've got snakes on your sleeve.
There's nothing on my sleeve.
Oh, yes. You've got snakes on your sleeve.
I have? What's next?
The show. The show's next.
Oh, my God.
Some very high-end material there.
I have no recollection of that. You know, the funny thing was I came to CBS on a 7-year contract. At the end of 3 years, they let me go. They didn't know what to do with me, and I didn't know what to do with me.
That's the part that I'm interested in. Did you feel like you had a place to go in show business, a target? Did you just think, I want to do something, and I have to figure out what it is?
That's the answer. I had to figure out what it was. Because I really didn't know. I was happy to have the job. I was making more than I'd ever made in local television. But when they let me go, I had 3 kids and a house and didn't know what I was going to do. So ABC gave me a game show called Mother's Day, where we did like diaper changing contests. It was terrible. But after the show, I'd go out and audition for anything in the theater, maybe except opera and ballet. I got a few callbacks and finally got in a review, which saved my neck, and found out that I could sing and dance a little.
That's what I'm curious because you had not done a lot of acting before that, right?
No, none. Except high school.
So yeah. What made you think that you could? You were also not a singer or dancer particularly. So what made you think that that your plan was to go from the diaper changing contest to the Great White Way?
Mostly desperation. You know, I had to make a living. And I always knew that I was agile. You know, I thought, well, I probably could dance. I could carry a tune. That was about it. And I was amazed to get in this little review called The Girls Against the Boys, Burt Lahr and Nancy Walker. We only lasted 2 weeks. And we were off. And then I auditioned for Bye Bye Birdie and got the part, which, of course, changed my life.
I can only imagine. I mean, what was it like to go into that audition with what I'm sure were a sea of, you know, seasoned Broadway professionals, you know, super triple threats?
Yes.
And, you know, you're like, well, I can carry a tune and I'm very charming when I smile.
Right. Like many other times in my early career, my heart was in my mouth. I was scared to death. And I got up and sang a little song from Music Man and did a little soft shoe.
What song from the Music Man did you sing?
There was love all around, but I never heard. And then I sang Amy that Ray Bolger had done and did a little soft shoe. And Gower Champion walked up on the stage and said, "You have the part." And I almost fell into a faint. I have a feeling he saw himself, because we were exactly the same size and physique. And I think maybe he thought, I said, you know, I really can't dance. He said, we'll teach you. And that's when it was like flying, learning those dance steps. My God, it was fun for me.
Let's take a listen to another clip from the Dick Van Dyke Show. And my guest is Dick Van Dyke. So Rob, Dick Van Dyke's character, is a television writer on the show, TV comedy writer. And he has to have his show's sponsor over for dinner in this episode. And he and his wife, Laura, have been fussing over everything. But the whole thing is going, you'll be surprised to learn, very poorly.
How about a drink?
Martha and I don't drink. I always say that alcohol is too rich for my carburetor. Well, there's nothing funny about that.
No. That's not funny. Pithy, though.
Yes, it is. It's pithy. By the way, what did you think of last week's show?
Well, I thought last week's show was very funny.
Boy, so did I.
If you like slapstick humor.
Well, you can overdo it.
I, of course, like slapstick humor.
I love it.
But not on my show.
No, not on our particular show. No.
Not every week.
No, it's too
much. I like it once in a while.
That's me. I like it once in a while.
But generally, you both enjoy the show?
Yes,
no,
I did.
Didn't. Are you sure you wouldn't care for an hors d'oeuvre?
Yeah, or a drink.
We don't drink.
Oh, too rich for your carburetor.
What a great dialogue.
when did you audition for the Dick Van Dyke Show? Describe to me where you were at.
I didn't audition. I think Carl had seen me in Bye Bye Birdie and thought I'd be good in the part. And sent me about 10 or 11 scripts he'd written. And I had a pilot of my own. I threw it out the window. The writing was just brilliant. And I said, let me know when to come. I took a week off from the show and went out and did the pilot. No, I got hired kind of sight unseen. I didn't have to audition.
It's funny because Carl Reiner famously wrote the show for himself to star in. I think they made a pilot as well with him on screen.
Yes.
And, you know, it didn't go. And his agent basically convinced him, look, you've got half a season's worth of, you've got 13 scripts that are solid gold. Mm-hmm. Don't throw the baby away with the bathwater here.
Yes.
What was it like to go in and not just, you know, I think that for an actor, you often hear about it being a little bit weird to play a role based on a real person in front of that real person. But what is it like when that not only is that person your boss, but he is also a guy who failed at playing himself?
Well, I saw the pilot, and he really was not right. I mean, he was good. He was anxiety-ridden and nervous. And it really didn't sound, it wasn't funny. So he let me literally play myself. He was great at listening to your cadence, the way you spoke, and wrote it that way. So you all had to do was say the lines. He did that with every actor. It was amazing.
Did you meet your co-star, Mary Tyler Moore, like when you showed up for work the first day?
When I showed up for work for the rehearsal, yeah. She was wonderful. She was about 12 years younger. And I said, isn't she a little young? As it turned out, she was unbelievably good. But then on two or three shows, she picked up the comedy and went with it.
I would have been very uncomfortable working with Mary Tyler Moore because I have a kind of like a moral feeling that no one that good looking should be that funny. Like, it's kind of no fair. Like, you're a very handsome man yourself, Mr. Van Dyke, but at least you have a big nose. You know what I mean?
Thank you, yeah. Oh, have I got nose jokes?
But no, I mean, it's a great comfort to me that at least you're not perfect. Mary Tyler Moore is so good looking and so funny. It's like, give me a break, lady.
Yeah, she had never done comedy. And the first couple of shows, she was searching. But she had Maury and Rosemary and me all who had some timing. And she picked it up so fast and became probably the best comedian ever. And you're right, the best looking one, too.
When you were doing that show, I know you got sober in middle age.
Yeah.
Were you drinking when you were doing that show?
I was a normal drinker. Then it happened after that it began to catch up with me. I'd gone to England to do Shitty Shitty Bang Bang, and I did a few movies in a row there. And I don't know whether it was pressure or what, but I suddenly found myself drinking more than I should. And
How did you recognize that at some
point? Yes. Yes, I never drank at work, and I never drank publicly, really. I drank at home. But instead of having a martini, I would have three or four martinis and wake up with a kind of a hangover in the morning. I think I was very shy, and I found that a martini or two loosened me up, and suddenly I became really sociable. And I think that was the reason that I started it. But I had no idea that I had addiction in my personality.
We've got even more with Dick Van Dyke still to come. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
I'm Guy Raz, and on NPR's How I Built This, how Tim Ferriss, as an entrepreneur, author, investor, and podcaster, turned himself into a multi-million dollar brand. Subscribe or listen now.
Hi, I'm Joe Firestone.
And I'm Manolo Moreno.
And we host After Game Show, a podcast where listeners submit games and we play them regardless of quality with a dozen listeners from around the world.
We've had folks call in from as far as Sweden, South Africa, and the Philippines.
Here's an example. This is a game we called Zooey Deschanel, where you turn a celebrity's name into an animal pun. You have an example, Manolo?
Brad Gorilla Pit.
Oh, that's a pun on gorilla pits?
Yep.
I don't know.
That's Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
That's a high-quality game that you could expect.
Dr. Game Show has new episodes every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun.
Check us out, please.
Hey, all. It's Jesse again with a reminder that now, the end of the year, is a great time to support your local NPR member station. Do it now. Go to donate.npr.org/bullseye. And thanks. Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Dick Van Dyke. He and I talked in 2015. He is, of course, an actor and comedian who's been working for over 70 years. Van Dyke turned 95 earlier this month. He's also an author of several books. His most recent is called Keep Moving and Other Tips and Truths About Aging. Let's get back into it.
Did it take a lot for you to get on stage to be as kind of big and warm and sociable as your character in entertainment is?
No, I never was very nervous. I was nervous the opening night of Bye Bye Birdie on Broadway. I'm like scared to death. But I loved to perform so and working with an audience that I never really got very nervous.
was there something different about how you felt in a private situation and in a public situation? And what do you think it was?
I don't know. I loved performing to an audience, to a mass of people. One-on-one was when I was a little... I used to have a hard time in interviews even. But I finally got over it. And the drinking just slowly disappeared, little by little.
You write in your new book that part of it was, although you're not, you believe in a higher power but aren't necessarily religious, that part of it was prayer for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, well, I don't know whether you're praying to yourself or to the Almighty or what. I'm just saying that it works. It helped me a lot, and I still do.
How did you find it? I mean...
Well, I was raised in a Presbyterian family, and I had been a deacon in the church. I had taught Sunday school out on Long Island to 13-year-olds. So, there was a connection, a spiritual connection for me, even though I kind of disconnected from the institutional church.
Was it natural to you when you were... having really difficult problems with alcoholism? And I think you write also in the book that you had gone into AA and you had done various other things that hadn't helped you solve the problem or had helped you but not enough. Was it natural to you to pray for help?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm a prayer who says a lot of thank yous. I still do. When something good happens, I always say, thank you for that, because I have been awfully lucky in my life. I recommend it for anybody. It's there's something that, I don't know what it is, wholesome about it, but it's almost like a confession, getting things off your mind. For me, it's worthy of doing.
You also write in the book that there's bigger chapters and littler chapters. One of them is a little poem that you wrote about writing down your thoughts and feelings and your plans for the next day in a notebook next to your bed to let them go.
Yes, that's true.
So that you can come back to them.
Yeah.
And I wonder if part of the appeal of prayer for you is that feeling that you are letting something out into the world or letting something travel to God and thus not having to feel like you have to hold it.
I think you're probably right. I kind of handed it over so I don't have to. Mel Brooks went to a psychiatrist and said, during the night I get wonderful ideas. In the morning I wake up and I can't remember them. He said, write it down. So he put a pencil and paper beside. One night he had a brilliant idea, and he looked at his notebook in the morning, and it said, write it down.
It's a stupid joke. It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm talking to Dick Van Dyke. His new book is called Keep Moving and Other Tips and Truths About Aging. And since I've got Dick Van Dyke here, I probably ought to play some Mary Poppins, huh?
Oh, my God.
You're out there. You've probably seen Mary Poppins. I mean, if you haven't, you probably should, because it's great. So, obviously, one of the characters Dick Van Dyke plays in Mary Poppins is Bert the Chimney Sweep. This is one of his signature tunes, Chim Chim Cheree.
Chim Chimney, Chim Chimney, Chim Chim Cheree. A sweep is as lucky can be. Chim Chimney, Chim Chimney, Chim Chim Cheroo. Good luck, we're above when I shake hands with you. Or blow me a kiss. And that's lucky too.
Now, that during that little piece there, the Cockney wasn't that bad. But I've taken it on the chin, oh, my God, all my life.
It's terrible.
Oh, it really is.
There's a few moments of a little bit of something.
Yeah, here and there, I almost got it. There was a tweet I saw, that Helen Mirren, Judy Dench, Jeremy Irons, who were asked who did the worst British accent in the history of movies. And, of course, I won, hands down. I'm number one in that respect. But I was working with an entire cast of Brits. Nobody said to me, you know, you really ought to work on that. I was so busy with the singing and dancing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a testament to the power of the rest of your performance. It really is a wonderful performance and a wonderful film.
I always say it's not a Cockney. It's a little shire way in the north of England that had been settled by people from Ohio.
Yeah. So I was so happy to have run across this interview that you did in 1964, whenever it was. And it was while Mary Poppins was in post-production, which was a quite an elaborate post-production because they were, you know, there's all these animated sequences and special effects sequences in the yes. film. You said in this interview, I thought that the movie of Bye Bye Birdie stunk, basically. I'm paraphrasing here, but you did not mince words about how you felt that the film had messed up the stage show. But yes. you said, but I just made a Disney movie that I think is something that will be a landmark film of its type.
Yeah.
And, which, of course, it is. But I think it's rare for someone to have so strong of a feeling on, especially a film project. And I wonder what about working on that film made you feel like, wow, this actually is something really special.
We all felt it almost every day that there was something magical happening. The songs the Sherman Brothers wrote and the Mark and Dee Dee Wood who did the choreography, everything just had life to it. I'd been in movies where the producer comes in the morning and says, oh, the dailies were great. One, and you know they weren't. But we just all felt that something really magical was happening. We couldn't wait to come to work, even though it was hard. Some of the dances nearly killed me at that time. But we all knew it just was going to be a good movie.
I wonder if after the Dick Van Dyke Show ended, you ever found yourself wondering, huh, is my career going to be the guy from the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Oh, yeah. And that's what happened. I was either Bert or Rob Petrie. Strangely enough, it was supposed to be Petrie. Nobody told me. I said Petrie on the first show. Nobody ever corrected me. No, I really, fortunately, ended up doing a movie called The Morning After, a good movie about alcoholism. So good, as a matter of fact, that they show it in a lot of rehab centers because the guy doesn't make it. We got in quite a bit of trouble with the National Council on Alcoholism. They wanted to have a happy ending, and we let them die. And this had a really positive effect on a lot of people in rehab.
Were you already sober by the time you did that movie?
Just barely. Just barely. I noticed that at the rap party, nobody drank anything but orange juice. It kind of affected everybody. But I did Chitty Bang Bang and the one about smoking, which is so much fun to do, with Norman Lear. So I got a lot of good projects.
I want to play a clip from a project of yours that I had never heard anything about until I started reading, preparing for this interview. It was, you know, the 1970s were the golden age of television comedy variety, and you had a show called Van Dyke and Company.
Yes.
Among the cast of Van Dyke and Company were Bob Einstein, who folks might know as Super Dave Osborne.
Right.
And a guy called Andy Kaufman. And this show ran very briefly, but won
12 shows.
But won an Emmy.
I know.
And so one of the gags on the show is that Andy Kaufman would interrupt you when you were trying to do something.
Yes.
He would interrupt you in character. And he would just do these, you know, these weird Andy Kaufman things. And so in this clip, you're doing a sketch with John Denver.
Yes.
Pretty much the perfect person to be doing a sketch with.
Full costume and everything.
Yeah. And Andy Kaufman interrupts you in character.
What are you doing here?
You remember I was on your show? You said that I could come back.
Yeah, well, first of all, don't believe everything I say. And second of all, you're interrupting the sketch here.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Andy's man here who was on our Fonzie lookalike contest last week. And he came out and he told a joke and he was terrific. And I'm sure we're going to have him back on our show sometime.
You know, Dick, I don't know about you, but this puppet suit is getting very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know it, John. I'm sorry. Look, I'll take care of it, okay?
Why don't you, you could take off your puppet suit, and when you go down to take it off, I could play a record and do a job.
I think we had Andy on a lot. We just loved him. When he first auditioned for all the writers, Hewitt played his tom-toms and did his thing. All the writers got up and walked out on him. Said, this guy is nothing. You know, what is he? They didn't understand what he was doing at all. Neither did I, but it was funny.
Wait, I mean, how did he, okay, so I can see him coming in and playing tom-toms and everybody walking out. That part I get.
Yeah.
So how did the second part come in where he came on the show all the time?
The audience loved it, loved the fact that he would come in and interrupt us. And he was getting such good feedback from the audience that we just had to use him. But, you know, he was a transcendental meditation guy. And we'd be standing, one day we were standing on the hall arguing about something. I looked down and realized that Andy is sitting there in a lotus position meditating. He did it a lot. He was very strange. It was very hard to talk to personally. You couldn't get a conversation going with Andy. I don't know what it was.
But you have a picture in the new book of you in some promo shots from the 50s, from before you were a success, let's yep. say, before you were a grand success. And one of the things you say is that you always wanted to look like a success even before you were. And yeah, I wonder how you came to value looking good. I mean, that's one of the things that I remember about the Dick Van Dyke Show is Rob Petrie always looked great.
Yeah.
And
had a good suit.
Yeah, exactly. So why do you think that was important to you?
My father, who didn't have any money at all, was kind of a clothes horse. He was built like Fred Astaire. He would go to Chicago and buy a Bond suit, two pair of pants and a coat for $40. But somehow, on him, they looked good. He could put anything on. And he was always a sharp dresser for a guy who didn't have the money to do it. And I admired my dad. And I liked the way Astaire and Cary Grant and Walter Pigeon. I wanted to emulate those guys. Today, kids want to emulate hoods. It's the strangest thing about generations.
He was a salesman, right?
They were traveling salesmen for Sunshine Biscuits. Everybody called him Cookie. He was a very funny guy, except when he tried to get in front of an audience. Funny man, though.
Was he around a lot when you were a kid?
No, he was gone 5 days a week, really, on the road. So I didn't see him that often. His dad, my grandfather Van Dyke, was kind of my mentor and had a great effect on me. Great man.
One of the things that your book is about is kind of bringing joy to everyday life, pursuing the things that enliven you on a regular basis.
Did I tell you the title I wanted they wouldn't buy? What to Do While Circling the Drain. It's a great title. They wouldn't go for it.
Your book has a very genial tone. I can understand why they might. But I wonder if that was something that you always did or something that you've learned in. I've heard you describe what you're living now as your third life.
Yes, absolutely. I'm on a third marriage. I lost two wives to cancer. And I'm having a life that very few people in my generation get. I'm extremely happy. I have my quartet that I sing with constantly. I'm a computer animator. And life is just the best, and I don't worry. I'm way past being anxiety-ridden.
Was that always the case?
No, I worried a lot about my kids, particularly during the 60s, you know, and the 70s. I pity a parent now with teenagers. It's worse than ever. But my kids ended up being absolutely non-toxic to the world. They're great people.
When your second wife died, I can't imagine that you expected that she would die before you did.
No, both of them. The husband always goes first. You just assume that.
And I wonder if you had any idea of what your life could be like without her.
Oh, I didn't have a bachelorhood. I went from my mother direct into a marriage. I don't know what it is to be alone. I have to share life with someone. I can't, I have friends who are bachelors and enjoy it. Being alone and facing life alone just isn't. I have to be able to share it with someone, to turn and speak to someone. I never dreamed that what happened to me was going to happen. And I ran to an angel half my age, and we just celebrated our fourth wedding anniversary on the 29th.
What was it like for you in the time in between?
Bad. It was bad. I had a lot of friends, you know. I was kind of a sitting duck there for a while for widows. I'd find a meatloaf on the front porch or some chicken soup or something.
Look, if I'm a widow and I found out that Dick Van Dyke is single, I'm making a meatloaf.
Yeah, but it was kind of, it was fun, but on the other hand,
good-looking guy. You got a nice house in Malibu.
And so I have never walked up to a strange woman in my life. I never had the nerve. I was at the SAG Awards and saw this girl back in the green room. And I was talking to a movie star, Gwyneth Paltrow, I think. And I saw her. I said, excuse me. I went over and said, hi, my name is Dick, and sat right down. And she said, weren't you in Mary Poppins or something? She had no idea who I was. But for the first time in my life, I kept at it. I kept at it. She would bring me dinner at night. Sometimes she would come by and cook me a dinner. And I proposed, I think, for a year before she finally decided to do it. We were a little worried about the age difference, but no one ever said a word.
What kind of plans do you make when you're 90?
Hardly any. Hardly any. You don't make plans, except for the day. I always make a list before I go to bed at night of what I'm going to do in the morning, and it always turns out to be way too ambitious. No, living life day to day becomes important. And I've gotten a few 90-year-old guys up off their wheelchairs or off their walkers. And if I can get them to the gym for 10 or 12 minutes a day, they'll start walking. You can't believe what it does.
What do you do at the gym?
I go in the morning, I do a treadmill, and then I do regular lifting weights, a whole routine of weightlifting. I never overdo it. If my body starts to feel tired, I quit. I'm not bound to do the whole circuit. And I do a lot of in the water, get in the pool, because that's good, because I have all the infirmities of my age, arthritis and CPOD and peripheral, all those things. But keeping moving is the answer, and blueberries for breakfast.
Well, Dick Van Dyke, I am so grateful to you for taking the time to come beyond Bullseye. What an honor to get to meet you and talk to you.
It's been more than a pleasure. Thank you, Jed. I hope I answered everything sufficiently.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Dick Van Dyke from 2015. Maybe one of the best entertainers ever? His book, Keep Moving and Other Tips and Truths About Aging, is great for readers of just about any age. Please go give it a look. And of course, happy 95th birthday, Dick Van Dyke. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created in the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California, where across the street from me, they have just started pile driving. They're building two houses and a pile driver is involved. It may make some guest appearances on this show. Our program produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Kevin Ferguson. Jesus Ambrosio and Jordan Cowling are our associate producers. We get help from Casey O'Brien and Kristen Bennett. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is by The Go Team. Thanks very much to them and to their label, Memphis Industries. If you want to hear the latest about what we're up to, you can keep up with our show on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. We post all our interviews there. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.